is Rabble Radio, recorded on Friday, September 6, 2024. I'm your host, Brianne Doyle. Thanks so much for tuning in. Rabble's got its finger on the beat of the issues that matter to you. If you're curious about the latest news in Canadian politics, labor, environment, or social justice, you've come to the right place. This is news for the rest of us, free of corporate influence. Earlier this month, the Canadian Association of Physicians for the Environment, or CAPE, launched a campaign highlighting how the fossil fuel industry in British Columbia is increasing healthcare system costs and reducing access to care. Today on Rabble Radio, Dr. Melissa Lem, the president of CAPE, joins Rabble Labor reporter Gabriella Kalugay-Kasuga to discuss in more detail about this campaign and how CAPE works with other healthcare organizations and unions to create a healthier planet and population. Here is that conversation. Take a listen.
So thank you so much for joining us on Rabble Radio today, Melissa.
Thank you so much for inviting me on, Gabriella.
And just to get started, can you tell me a bit about CAPE and what you guys do?
CAPE stands for the Canadian Association of Physicians for the Environment, and we are celebrating our 30th anniversary since our founding this year. Essentially, it was started by a small group of family physicians who were really interested in the impacts of the environment on people's health, and there was no physicians charity around, no real healthcare charity around to address those issues. And so we've grown since then. Obviously, we have thousands of members across the country now. We have about 20 staff. They originally had no staff. And we have volunteer physicians and other healthcare professionals in every province working on local health issues and national health issues to try to make sure that healthy people are living on a healthy planet. Our mission is to protect human health by protecting the planet.
It's interesting, you mentioned it's been 30 years and you guys have really grown. What do you think it is about this connection between health and environment that is drawing in so many physicians and health workers?
There could be a lot of reasons for this. From what I've seen, it seems like the impacts of the environment on our health are becoming more and more obvious. We know that we're in a climate crisis, a pollution crisis, and biodiversity crisis. And we're increasingly seeing those effects. Within Canada, we have seen climate disaster after climate disaster over the past few years, whether it's severe wildfires filling the skies across the country and in other countries, unfortunately, with our wildfire smoke, whether it's extreme flooding or extreme heat, which is unfortunately one of the biggest climate-related killers in Canada. The effects of what we've been doing to the environment, what we've been putting into the environment, have really come home to roost. And I think more and more people are paying attention to it because they have to. It's unavoidable at this point. And I mean, CAPE has been around for 3 decades now, and we already had a pretty big presence before healthcare workers started to recognize the effects of climate change. And it's just become, I think, a natural home for anyone who's concerned about these issues to join. And also because we have been at the forefront, a lot of mainstream health organizations like the Canadian Medical Association, for example, have joined us in our work, like the Canadian College of Family Physicians, like the Royal College of Physicians and Surgeons of Canada. These are organizations that represent every single doctor in Canada, and we've been collaborating with them in substantive ways. So I think we've blazed a trail and we're also bringing other people along. And I think that's what's been responsible for a lot of our success and growth in the past few years.
Can you tell me more a bit about the work with these other organizations? You mentioned you're bringing people along on this work. So, you know, what is going to be happening moving forward?
CAPE is really good at identifying areas where there are gaps in advocacy and where there are gaps in public knowledge and also government policy. And one example would be our recent fossil fuel ad ban campaign, which was launched within the last couple of years. It essentially compares advertising of fossil fuels to the advertising of tobacco that occurred as recently as the 1980s within Canada. And we know that tobacco is extremely harmful for our health. In the same way, advertising fossil fuels is extremely harmful for our health because it stokes demand for a product that is linked to all kinds of health harms, whether it's air pollution that kills 1 in 7 people of Canada prematurely every year, or whether it's driving climate change that's resulting in incredible costs for the healthcare system and health harms for patients. So that was a big campaign that we're still in the process of working on. We managed to get MP Charlie Angus to introduce Bill C-372 in the House of Commons, which seeks to ban fossil fuel advertising across Canada. And it's going to be coming up for its second reading this fall. So we're hoping a lot of people will support that. But essentially, we had a lot of health organizations from across the country, including the Canadian College of Family Physicians and the Royal College of Physicians and Surgeons of Canada, signing on to that initial letter that we launched on Clean Air Day 2 or 3 years ago, calling for a ban on fossil fuel advertising in Canada. And something else that's really exciting is our work to train up health professionals to become effective advocates. We have an advocacy and mobilization program. We've had some really great training over the past couple of years. And what the Canadian Medical Association has done is they've agreed to sponsor several of their members to engage in this training program to become effective environmental advocates. So there are lots of different ways that we're collaborating and supporting each other's work.
Yeah, that's really awesome to see that collaboration happening and to see this work progressing. Kind of on that topic, you were mentioning, you know, fossil fuels, for example, and the need to do work around how those are advertised. I know that there was a press conference this month about liquefied natural gas and their health impacts. Can you tell me a bit more about that?
Thank you very much for asking about that, Gabby. It's something that's been really occupying my attention and my energy over the last, I would say, at least month or so, as we've been working to launch this campaign and also actually launching it and all the media attention that's followed after it. But it's a campaign called LNG and Healthcare. And we know that LNG stands for liquefied natural gas. And what we're doing is we're drawing connections between the impacts of the LNG and natural gas and fracking industry within BC to increased healthcare costs within our province. We know that healthcare consistently ranks among the top three concerns of people within BC and really across Canada. And as healthcare professionals, I think we're really well placed to both observe what these effects are, but also communicate them to the public. And in terms of what the current healthcare implications of the LNG and natural gas and fracking industries are within Canada, on a wider scale across the province, we know that expansion and extraction and use of fossil fuels are what's driving the climate crisis. And within British Columbia, we know it's the liquefied natural gas industry that is currently expanding and puts us at risk of not meeting our greenhouse gas emissions reductions targets. So within the north, the northeast of BC, there is a big project called LNG Canada, which is the largest private sector investment in Canada's history, which is looking to expand the LNG industry for export to other countries. And we have two of the world's top 57 polluters operating within the northeast of BC, working on and investing in LNG Canada. And so if this goes ahead, and if all the other LNG projects that are proposed for establishment within BC go ahead, it's going to be almost impossible for us to miss our targets. And we know we have to rapidly reduce our greenhouse gas emissions if we want a livable future. We also know that indoor and outdoor air pollution from expanding fossil gas use is also harming our health. And so this ranges from the exposure of people inside their homes to gas stoves, but also the combustion products of natural gas we use to heat our homes that are then vented to the outside, that are responsible for about 19% of nitrogen oxide pollution, which we know is linked to harms to cardiac and respiratory health in particular. But a story I think that hasn't been told, and this is really the story that we were seeking to highlight in our campaign, were the direct local health effects of the LNG and fracking industry on people, communities, and workers. So I have been personally working and advocating in this area for over 5 years. And people might wonder, well, how did CAPE manage to speak with all these different physicians and community members? And it's because we want to hear from people on the ground. We've reached out to physicians in Dawson Creek in particular and tried to talk to them about what they were seeing. And the stories that have been coming back over the past several years have been essentially bone chilling. I've also personally lived and worked in the north. So my first job straight out of residency was as a full service rural family doctor in Hazelton, BC, on the traditional territories of the Gitxsan and Wet'suwet'en nations. And so I've lived in the north and I've seen what people's concerns are. And what is really important to me is when I see something or I hear something that's of concern, I want to say something about it. I don't want to stay quiet. And I realize that as a physician who lives in the South, I have a lot more leeway to say things about what I've heard than physicians who still have connections to the North or who live in the North because of the risks to their reputations or connections they still have within these communities. And so what I've done is spoken with a number of these physicians who have left the North because of their concerns about the community and health impacts of the fracking and LNG industry, and they've given me permission to tell their stories. And these stories range from impacts on the local schooling system, for example. So when you have a local community that's focused on educating kids so that they can work in the local economy, which of course makes sense, they don't tend to offer as many higher level academic courses. So if you want a job outside the oil and gas industry when you're older, it's really hard to find the kind of education you would like. So a lot of doctors, in fact, end up pulling their families out of the community around middle school age because they're seeking better education opportunities and healthier community opportunities for their families. And these doctors also see a very high burden of disease, whether it's chronic diseases that arise from unhealthy oil and gas local culture in the work camps, or whether it's actual possible effects of the fracking industry on their patients' health. And so they've reported strangely high rates of different kinds of tumors and cancers, rare lung diseases that they've seen in their patients that they didn't see anywhere else they practiced. And so these kinds of concerns led all the doctors that we spoke with or identified who left the community to, in fact, install reverse osmosis water filtration systems in their homes to make sure that their families had access to safe water. And they would say that, well, other people in the community either don't know or they don't have the means to install this protective systems in their home. And then something else to identify are the social costs. So we know that when large extractive industries come into communities, they can worsen housing affordability, they disrupt families and communities. And so we're seeing high rates of sexually transmitted infections and substance abuse in Northeast BC. But circling back to the original impacts that I mentioned on healthcare workers, within Dawson Creek in particular, so this is where we spoke with all the different physicians who left, we've identified at least 7 physicians who directly cited the health and community impacts of the LNG and fracking industry as the reasons why they moved their families away from the community. And this is a community that requires at least 15 physicians, family physicians, to help share responsibility to staff the emergency department and also provide primary care. And so if you think about the fact that over the past 5 years, a number that represents about half of this complement has left the community, you can start to imagine how that might contribute to, for example, what we've seen in terms of local closures of the emergency rooms. This is a big story that's been making headlines across BC this entire summer. These emergency rooms are shut because they don't have enough staffing. And so you can imagine if doctors who have been in the community for a long time are picking up their communities and leaving, you can start to think how this might contribute to lack of availability of healthcare services within these communities. And so that's why our message is that LNG expansion within BC and the industry itself is leading to harms to the healthcare system.
It's interesting you mention, like, people are removing themselves from certain communities because of the health risks, but those people are health workers who are required in the communities. So how do community members handle that? Like, what's the alternative when people are, you know, forced out because of the health risk?
Well, the thing about working in the healthcare industry is that your skills are portable. So you can work wherever you want. After, for example, you've fulfill your return of service requirements and So the physicians we spoke with who left had a long time ago filled their return of service requirements in terms of being able to come to Canada and work and then move to another community. But they chose to leave after they started to notice the effects on their own family members, on their colleagues, on their patients and their friends that they thought were linked to the LNG and fracking industry. And so they saw cases of, for example, rare tumors, strange blood diseases, cancers within the local population that made them think, I don't think it's safe for me to stay here in this community. And when you think about the factors that keep workers in a job, one factor is job satisfaction. So whether it's on the job working conditions and a competitive salary. And every doctor we spoke with said the job itself is wonderful. I really liked practicing medicine there. The medicine was interesting. The working conditions were good. But then there are also environmental pressures outside your job. So that involves work-life balance and family obligations. And in this case, the environment itself was a source of pressure for them to leave their community. When they thought about the fact that, okay, I'm making a really good salary here, I enjoy the work, but I don't feel like this community is safe or the right fit for me or my family, that's what drives workers to leave. And so I think we really need to think about when it comes to retention, recruitment and retention of healthcare workers in these communities, you want to make sure that the community itself is as healthy and safe as it can be so that the workers actually want to stay there. And I want to give you an example. So I'm doing this interview right now from Yellowknife. I live in Vancouver. I live and work in Vancouver typically, but I also do rural medicine within BC and in the north. And about a year ago, I was supposed to work up here. And 1 or 2 days before my flight was due to leave to go up to Yellowknife, I got the phone call saying that my locum had been canceled because of the wildfire evacuation of the city. And so for weeks, I had preparing myself mentally to head up north into this emergency zone and thinking, I don't know what I'm going to see up there. I want to do my job. I want to provide care to this local community, even if it risks my own safety. And so I'm, in fact, back here finally a year later working, and I've spoken with a lot of different patients about the concerns they have now about the trauma that they experienced when they had to evacuate a year ago. And I myself have experienced smoke exposure this locum because of the accommodations. I can remember one night this past week where the smoke was so thick inside my locum apartment here, despite the windows being shut, that it felt extremely unsafe for me and my family. And I approached the local kind of department that is responsible for helping with recruitment of doctors or traveling doctors or locums, and told them we need air purifiers in every single locum accommodation as a health and safety measure. This is essential health equipment if you want physicians to keep coming up here and working. And they're very receptive, and hopefully we'll take that forward. But it's a whole mix of different things that keep physicians within communities. Like I said, whether it's the actual job itself, whether it's your salary, or whether it's the actual environmental and community conditions. And unfortunately, because of those conditions within Northeast BC, we do see healthcare workers leaving.
Yeah, for sure. And that's really interesting. I have questions about, like, how have you seen the government addressing these issues? Because I'm not from BC, I'm in Ontario. But here, the way they've tried to address these issues when people leave for environmental reasons, for whatever reasons that they choose to leave the health sector, they try to address this problem with essentially more privatization. And I'm wondering if that is the same case that you have been seeing through your work as well.
Well, certainly that's what different communities in Northeast BC in particular, where fracking and LNG happens, have been doing. It's something I want to clarify too for people who live outside of BC or even within BC and don't quite know what the link is between LNG and fracking and natural gas. Essentially within BC, the vast majority of all the natural gas we produce is produced by a really water intensive and polluting process called hydraulic fracturing or fracking that releases natural gas deposits trapped deep below the surface of the earth into wells that they've drilled. And there are currently over 25,000 fracking wells scattered across Northeast BC that are essentially providing natural gas to the natural gas and the liquefied natural gas industry. And so in terms of what local governments have been trying to do, so first of all, Something that I've noticed and something that I noticed in response to our campaign is they try to say that this is a safe and highly regulated industry that's been around for decades within Canada. But something that they failed to point out is that four different provinces other than British Columbia have actually banned or placed moratoria on fracking for natural gas because of what they've deemed to be the environment and health harms. So if you start to think about, well, these provinces did their own evaluations of the research and they think it's too dangerous for the people in their own province, you ask, well, why isn't it too dangerous for the people in BC? So that's one thing, is trying to kind of downplay the risks of the industry. And then something else on a very systems-wide perspective is they just try to throw money at the problem because that's one of the conditions that tend to bring people to a community. So they offer signing incentives, bonuses to people who come to live in the community. And these return of service agreements, they try to recruit physicians from other countries to come. And these are typically two-year contracts. And these are often physicians who want to come to the community, do their service, and then move to larger communities. But there are some physicians who in the past did stay for longer because they liked the practice there. But then when they started to notice all the different strange, rare, and fatal diseases that they were experiencing, they actually left. And I want to zero in on one more thing. So I mentioned that a lot of the physicians installed reverse osmosis water filtration systems in their homes. So Dawson Creek in particular, their water supply comes from the Kiskatina River, which is a kind of a surface water source. And there are lots of different ways, unfortunately, that surface water can be polluted by fracking. There are some people who have said, oh, there's no way that the river could be polluted by fracking. Well, I mean, the city itself has identified the fact that a lot of different industries that are proliferating in Northeast BC have the potential through runoff or leaks or direct pollution of waterways to affect the water supply. There are multiple documented cases of companies illegally dumping toxic fracking chemicals into Dawson Creek water treatment supplies. There are lots of different methods of water contaminations. Like I said, there's flaring of the gas that pollutes the air. There's leaks of fracking fluid from open frack ponds that they use, kind of like tailings ponds for mining, where that can enter the watershed. And there's all kinds of evidence. So another criticism that people say is your evidence is anecdotal about these doctors identifying these rare cancers and fatal lung diseases. There was a scoping review of epidemiologic studies published in the Canadian Journal of Public Health this year, and they zeroed in on dozens, over 50 different studies from different jurisdictions across North America. And the vast majority of them identified health harms, whether they were adverse birth outcomes like low birth weight or preterm birth or birth defects, whether it was asthma or other lung diseases, heart disease, leukemia in children, and all-cause mortality. This is not anecdotal evidence. This is extremely well-documented and very well-researched evidence. And I was speaking with a health researcher who's done a lot of research in Northeast BC, Dr. Elise Caron-Baudouin from the University of Toronto. And she said, I don't know how anyone can speak of anecdotal evidence anymore unless they're not up to date on the current scientific literature or are arguing in bad faith. The thing is, it's very easy for everyday people to kind of dismiss or not pay attention to scientific research because it's kind of nerdy and it's not that interesting, but it's stories that grab people. And so that's what we've been trying to do is build relationships with people in these communities or people who have left these communities and tell their stories, which are a reflection of the actual science that's out there.
And I think these stories are really important to highlight, like just from our conversation, the sense I'm getting, right, is these industries that are harmful to the environment are in turn harming people's health, which puts undue burden on health workers, which then burdens our public healthcare system. Would that be a fair way to kind of connect all these different pieces?
That's exactly right. And then you think about the wider effects of the oil and gas industry, in particular on climate change, which it's been calculated by the Canadian Climate Institute, if we don't start bending the curve of our emissions down rapidly, that by mid-century, so this sounds like it's so far away, but it's actually within just the next 25 years, I'll still probably be practicing in our healthcare system at that time, that we'll be seeing an additional $110 billion per year in costs to the healthcare system because of climate change. And I don't know about you, we hear all the time about how we don't have enough money, we need more investment in our healthcare system. If we can work together to reduce our emissions on a broader scale and avoid these massive additional costs to the healthcare system, this increases the chances that we will have a functional healthcare system that workers will want to continue to work in the future. And so it's really about survival of a functioning and high quality healthcare system within Canada too.
And I think that's why this work is so important to highlight. So I'm really thankful that you joined us on Rabble Radio today. Is there anything else you wanted to add or mention before we sign off?
I'd love to mention a few things about what we're calling for with our LNG and healthcare campaign. So again, if you want to learn more, go to lngandhealthcare.ca. But we not only want to raise awareness about the impacts of the LNG industry on healthcare and climate change within the province, but we also want to call on government to make a change. So the first thing that we're calling for government to do is to enact a moratorium on all new hydraulic fracturing development until a comprehensive and independent health impact assessment about the health effects of LNG and fracking activities in BC is completed. I think this is really important for us. I think we have enough evidence now, backed up by stories from people, that we need a good assessment. And the federal government just announced a $12 million funded study about the health impacts of the Alberta oil sands. We need the same kind of study here in BC. We also want strengthened regulations and monitoring to reduce air and water pollution from fracking and LNG operations, again, to protect local communities and workers while this industry is still operating. We also think it's really important to enact policy to end natural gas tie-ins to all new buildings in BC by the end of 2025, and to create structures like a crown corporation to mobilize workers to retrofit existing buildings and to build new affordable zero emissions housing to eliminate fossil fuel heating by 2035. This is really important to reduce demand of fracked natural gas from Northeast BC, which will reduce harms on local communities, but also to make sure that people across BC are not exposed to the harms of natural gas within their own homes. Fourth, we're hoping that the provincial government will provide support to workers and Indigenous communities who are impacted by the LNG and fracking industry. We want them to be supported to work towards a clean energy economy. We want there to be investments in training for them in clean jobs and a guarantee of good, safe, and sustainable jobs. Something we didn't get into was how unsafe actually working in this industry is. The mortality rate is significantly higher than other industries, in fact. And then last but not least, speaking to the impacts on the healthcare system, we're asking the provincial and federal governments to work together to implement a framework for healthcare system resilience in BC that allows us to plan and prepare for climate disasters and also make sure that the workforce is working in safe and healthy environments. And this is just a start. There's a lot more work that needs to be done, but these are the five things that we're calling for through our LNG and healthcare campaign.
Well, thank you so much for sharing everything about this campaign. I look forward to seeing what comes next. And thank you again for joining us on Rabble Radio today.
Thanks, Gabby. It's been a pleasure.
And that's it for Rabble Radio this week. Thanks as always for tuning in. If you like the show, please consider subscribing to Rabble Radio on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. And please rate, review, share Rabble Radio with your friends. It takes 2 seconds to support independent media like Rabble. Thank you to all the journalists and writers who contributed to this week's content on Rabble.ca, and thank you to Carl Nirenberg for supplying the music. Lastly, thank you to you for tuning in to Rabble Radio. I'm Brianne Doyle, and I'll talk to you next week.